Welcome back to the Ion College Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Norlander. Goodman and Parrish are with me as usual on a Wednesday, and we have an accelerated version today, so no dilly-dallying. We're going to get right to a lot of good stuff on Tuesday night that is worth getting to, from Miami to Michigan State to Missouri and all around. Fellas, I'm going to go right to Goodman here first, and we'll go to the big one, IU over Michigan State on the road. Good win, first win in East Lansing in 22 years there. And now I wonder, Goodman, if the conversation will start drifting toward, okay, is Indiana truly better than everyone else? I'm not ready to go there just yet. What about you, buddy?
No, I don't think they're necessarily better, but they've proven more lately. And they've gotten two huge road wins against Ohio State, who, as I wrote last night, they're not great, but still winning in Columbus is a good win. And then when you beat Michigan State for the first time in East Lansing and 17 tries since 1991. And by the way, this Michigan State team's pretty darn good. I think that now puts the target on your back and the fact that you've earned the number one spot. And this team has a lot of pieces. We've known that. But they've come together and they've shown, to me more than anything else, they've shown that they're a different team than the one last year or the year before in terms of mental toughness. Forget about the talent and all that. Sometimes it takes a while to get over that mental hurdle, you know, of winning games on the road. They've done that now. They've got the swagger. They think they're number one, and they've earned it.
Yeah, I don't know that they're that much better than everybody else. I agree with Jeff. But they're clearly deserving of the number one ranking. Since they lost at home to Wisconsin on January 15th, they've done nothing but win except for a fluky loss, weird play at the buzzer to Illinois. That means they've knocked out Michigan State at home and on the road. They've knocked out Michigan at home. They've knocked out Ohio State on the road. And they're operating at the highest level in college basketball right now. Again, does it make them an overwhelming favorite when we get a field of 68? Not an overwhelming favorite, but right now I think they'd be most people's pick.
Do you guys both, our player of the year went up on Tuesday morning prior to the game. You had Oladipo at number two. Do you both have him now as number one overall for player of the year?
I'm not sure who I have. Honestly, I think we can go back and forth. Again, Oladipo's been better lately. Burke was better early. We tend to forget what happens in November and December, where I think Burke was probably the better player. You know, I'd probably give the odd to Oladipo today only because they're the number one team in the country and it's that close, and where Burke is the better passer, the better floor leader, Oladipo's obviously the better defender. They're both good both shooting the ball extremely well this year. So I'd probably give Oladipo the slight edge after last night's performance.
I would give it to Oladipo right now because, and I tweeted this last night, and folks started tweeting back at me saying, he's only averaging this, or he's not as good of a player as, Ben McLemore. And for some reason, I guess there's no clearly defined – there's no clear definition for National Player of the Year, but all I can do is tell you what I value. And what I value are great players on great teams, and if they have the statistics to back that up, that's better. But if I'm looking at, a criteria, statistics ranks probably no better than third. I don't really care. Are you the best player, and are you affecting winning in a lot of different ways for what we consider a great team? So given that's my definition, I would go Oladipo 1, Burke 2, and then I don't really care about, I don't care about 3, but I think whoever's third, and we could argue that for 20 minutes, whoever's third is probably a distant third right now behind those two. I would go with Mason Plumlee third right now, and I got some pushback on this last night, and it sort of speaks to what Jeff said about people forgetting what happened earlier in the year. People are like, why Mason Plumlee? How can you justify Mason Plumlee? Because he's averaging 18 and 10 for a top 5, 6, 7 basketball team in the country?
He was the most dominant player over the first 6 weeks, clearly.
Oh, I know, but you know what people kept saying to me? Well, he just got dominated over the weekend by Maryland. Well, first of all, he didn't get
one
dominated.
Game.
He had a – Hey, Jeff, we're agreeing for the first time ever, I think.
No, I got you. I'm agreeing with you. That's what I'm saying. It's like it was one bad
game.
We're stupid.
Right. I can go back 2 weeks and find a horrible game that Oladipo had, and I can go back probably a week and a half and find a bad game that Trey Burke had. If you're looking for a national player of the year, it's not a hottest player in the year. It's not who's coming off the biggest game of the year. It's who, from, in my opinion, November through March, was the best player on an elite team who also had numbers and affected winning in some way. And right now, I'd go Oladipo 1, Burke 2, and then really 3 could be anybody. It could be Mason Plumlee. It could be Marcus Smart. It could be Kelly Olynyk. It could be a number of different guys. But I think 1 and 2 right now is coming down between those Big Ten players.
All right, and by the way, we have Goodman on Skype, Parrish on his cell, because Parrish is up in New York, and the hotel gave us a sketchy connection, so I had to go with something a little more reliable there. You, Gary's been in New York for the past few days. You're going to Syracuse, Georgetown Saturday, right, Gary?
I am, and I'm looking forward to it. You know, like, we go to basketball games all the time, but I really enjoy going to places that I've never been before, and I know this sounds crazy, considering I've had this job for 7 years, I've never been to the Carrier Dome. I've never been to Syracuse for a basketball game. And so I knew I was going to be in New York all week with CBS Sports Network, and obviously it's easy to get from the city to Syracuse. So I'm going to take a flight Saturday morning and get there. And I was hoping that the Syracuse-Georgetown game, you know, would be compelling. I knew at the very least it would be compelling because it's going to be the last time, or at least we assume it's going to be the last time that Georgetown visits the Carrier Dome. As we find out, now it's going to be a game between, you know, two top-level Big East teams, and they've already announced it's going to be a sellout, the largest crowd in Carrier Dome history. So if I'm going, I picked a good time to go.
And Melo's getting his jersey retired.
Right.
I know the town, the city extremely well. You'll have a good time. Although it does have unless you get the baseline, it has the worst press seating of any venue in the country, because you get placed way, way in the back and off to the side. But other than that,
that's fine. I don't watch the games.
Yeah. I know. Okay. Fair enough. By the way, if you need to, get dressed and like start walking to where you got to walk, that's just going to add to the whole podcast aura. So feel free to do what you got to do here. Elsewhere, the big news from Tuesday was this weird thing with the NCAA, and it had just wrapped up. You know, our bad, we messed up, we got issues with our own internal investigation, and then it just kind of bends over, picks up on the table, hands the notice of allegations to Miami, like just like that. 2 minutes before Miami's game against Virginia started, it was really weird. And Miami ends up winning. Frank Haith in Missouri, he ends up winning. He said that he was not charged with. I'm trying to look for the exact quote here, guys.
Unethical conduct.
Unethical conduct. Thank you. And then Missouri ended up getting a win. Goodman, your reaction from any of this? I thought it was so bizarre that we had this break last night right before that game started.
Yeah, I mean, dating back to now a couple days ago with the NCAA's conference call, you know, it was kind of Mark Emmert doing what he felt like he had to do, not necessarily taking accountability or responsibility necessarily for what happened, but, you know, well, explaining it with the outside investigator and basically not saying, saying we're going to work to fix whatever the issues here are. But the bottom line is in all this, and our Dennis Dodd wrote it, somebody needs to fall at the top, whether it's Mark Emmert or Jim Ish. These are the people that hired
Julie Rolock.
Yeah, I always
sorry.
I always mess up her second and third name too. You got only have two names; it confuses me. Okay. Anyway, she went and got fired because of this. An investigator got fired because of this. To me, you should be held accountable at the highest degree for making those decisions. Who hired Julie? Who hired some of these people? It was Jim Ish and Mark Emmert. Who ultimately signed off on it? It was Jim Ish. So to me, again, did they screw up? Absolutely. Are they really being accountable at the top? No. Changes need to be made. We've been saying that forever now with the whole department. They need to just revamp the thing. They need to revamp it from top all the way down. Get, as I've said for years, get some former FBI guys. Get some guys who are trained properly, who know how to investigate, because Nothing against the investigators. I think they work hard. I think they try their best. They're in over their head. And now, because of all this, everything's changed now. You know, Frank Haith was going to get unethical conduct. Now he's not going to. It's no surprise that 2 days after the story I wrote, you know, everything changes. Mm-hmm. Because, again, now the NCAA is kind of on their heels. And other investigations are going to alter as well because they're scared at this point because they know people are going to come after them. People are going to sue them because of everything that's gone on.
You know, it was a few years ago when Mark Emmert first took over, they, I want to say, summoned some of us, but they invited about six or seven writers to Indianapolis, and I was one of them. And we went to dinner on like a Tuesday night, and we spent all day Wednesday with Emmert, and it was, and with Julie Rowlock, she was there, and all the people you're reading about now, they were involved in this, and we're at dinner one night, and we're in meetings all day the next day, and it was very, very casual, very informal, and the purpose of it, according to the NCAA, was that they were worried about their perception throughout fans and with people throughout our country, and worried that if we could, and hoped that if we better understood that they were just people, it wasn't some bureaucracy, they were people making people decisions, then we could relay that message to our readers, and hopefully people, you know, at the end of the day would have a better understanding of the NCAA. And since that moment, where they were very clearly trying to enhance their image on some level, it has been nothing but a mess. And sometimes I just wonder, like, if they understand how they're viewed, or properly understand how they're viewed. Because to come out and hit Miami with a notice of allegations, literally a day
right
after you have to announce that, you know, you're firing people and your organization has in and of itself conducted what could be described as unethical conduct, is just, as Jay Billis put it on Twitter this morning, completely tone deaf. How can you, if you're Mark Emmert, with a straight face, or even with a crooked face, to, you know, hit Frank Haith or anybody else with a failure to monitor charge as you just failed to monitor? I mean, like, it is, like, insane. I mean, it would be like, you know, a judge, like, getting a DUI, and then the next day sending a guy to jail for 10 years for a DUI. It's like, who are you? You know, like you're telling me I failed to monitor? It looks like you failed to monitor. And so we have this massive, hypocritical, controversial organization that can't even follow its own rules in charge with telling coaches and demanding coaches and boosters and players to follow rules. Imagine if you're Mike Cabongo right now. And let me be clear. There are NCAA rules in place. He knowingly broke them. He deserved to be punished on some level. That said, imagine if you're him and you're going, I got suspended 23 games because I didn't follow their little stupid rule. And they and Mark Emmert keeps his job even though his people didn't follow their rules. Imagine you're a head coach somewhere who gets hit with a failure to monitor charge, even if it's just Jim Calhoun, right, who I'm the last person to defend. They used a former manager slash booster slash agent to buy a player. They deserved more than they actually got. But imagine you're Jim Calhoun sitting back right now going, hold on, I got hit with a failure to monitor charge? Where's your failure to monitor charge, Mark Emmert? And so they've got an incredibly awful public relations problem right now, and they don't seem to understand how to fix it. They probably, given that Miami has been under this cloud for 2 years, would have been wise to just let this go, move on.
But if you let it go, here's the problem with that. Here's the problem with that. And even reducing some of the initial charges that were going to be levied is now, doesn't it now create even a larger atmosphere for coaches of, you know what, I can do whatever I want now because the NCAA, what are they going to do now? What are they going to have leverage-wise these days? Because everybody who gets accused of something here is going to come back and say, well, the investigation was tainted.
Well, yeah, Yeah, I mean, but that's done no matter what happens. That's done if you let him walk. It's done now. You tell me somebody starts getting – I mean, you think the Tennessee staff isn't right now, the Bruce Pearl staff going, okay, well, how did you investigate us then? If you couldn't follow the rules in the Miami investigation, how did you – did you really follow the rules in ours? I mean, so the skepticism and the idea that coaches and schools in general can now ask the question – Is our investigation tainted as well? That's going to be there no matter what.
But I think it's worse now than it's ever been.
I'm talking about. I thought the point you were trying to make is that if they were to let just Miami just say, you know what, we messed up, and so Miami, listen, we've had you out of this class for a while. We think you did things wrong, but we did things wrong as well. We're going to move on. I don't know how that would hurt the NCAA's image any more than the NCAA's image is right now. I don't know how that would bring the NCAA's investigation practices into question any more than they're brought into question right now.
Well, what they got to do is change quickly, and that hasn't usually worked out well for the NCAA. When they're reactive and they make quick moves, it's tended to really cripple them in other areas, and they, you know, they screw up by doing that, by being reactive quickly. So, but they got to revamp this whole, you know, they got to revamp everything. I mean, I've been told the morale right now in the NCAA is a disaster.
It must be. And look, my bottom line as being on some level, somebody who gets paid to have opinions about things and people, my number one rule is this: I'm not going to be hypocritical ever. So you'll never hear me criticize somebody for something that I've done myself. In other words, I won't even get into it. But just use your imagination. Anything that I could possibly get in trouble for, I would never write a column ripping somebody for that, right? Because I don't ever want it to come off like that. I know there are people out there who know me better than the average reader, and I would never want them reading something I wrote going, how is Gary Parrish going to criticize this guy for doing that when he's the guy who did X, Y, and Z? Like, I got that, right? So I don't So when I see the NCAA do what they just did, it just drives me crazy because it violates one of my only principles in this world, which is, you know, you don't hold somebody else accountable for something that you don't hold yourself accountable for. So the idea that Mark Emmert and his organization could with a straight face, I mean, how do you even do that? Hit Miami with a failure to monitor charge when your organization has just been nationally embarrassed because of what is, you know, by definition, a failure to monitor? I mean, that is off the charts. That's like an Onion article, except it's real life.
And it literally comes 28 hours after. I mean, for anyone listening that hasn't, like, pieced it together, the NCAA and Mark Emmert had a phone teleconference on Monday to kind of wrap up how they screwed up. And people were wondering how long it would take to continue the Miami investigation, when the notice of allegations would come out. And literally the next day, they do this. It kind of blew my mind. I'm loving the insight and passion you guys are bringing with this. Goodman, I do want to ask you, and Parrish, I know we're up against...
Just so we're clear, to make sure everybody understands, the NCAA held a teleconference to admit that investigators and even people at a higher level compromised their Miami investigation by doing things that are outside of the NCAA's reach in terms of gathering evidence and interviews and so on and so forth. And Mark Emmert basically had to say, hey, I didn't know about it. You know, I know I'm the head of the NCAA, but, like, I didn't know about this. And then the next day you hit somebody else, you essentially charge another school and another person, another human, with what, as they were saying, hey, I mean, Frank Haight's defense, and I don't care if you believe him or not. I'm not sure that I do. But his defense has always been, like, listen, if some stuff happened, then some stuff happened, but I didn't know about it. And what the NCAA essentially is saying to him is, even if you didn't know about it, you should have. You'll be held responsible. And yet Mark Emmert doesn't hold himself to that same standard. I think that's embarrassing.
Goodman, two quickies here. And Parrish, I know you're up against it. If for some reason you got to hang up and let us go, that's cool. But I did want to still just get through a couple more things. One, I know you've said, Goodman, that you think Emmert should resign. But I just wonder if that's a realistic possibility here in the next year or so from what your opinion or what you gather. And then two, Haith is now getting the failure to monitor charge. In practical terms, what does this? What should fans expect? What does this mean? What punishment, if any, will Faith Haith while he's coach of Missouri?
You know, the first one is I've been told that Emmert still got strong support among the membership, among the people that matter. And you could almost sense it from that conference call. His voice wasn't cracking. You know, he still had that same kind of swagger that he's had since he took over as president of the NCAA a couple years ago. So as of right now, I do not think Mark Emmert is in trouble. I wonder if he will make a move with his right-hand man, Jim Ish. Mm. As far as Haith, I think the issues you're going to face if you're Frank Haith are probably recruiting restrictions, days on the road come July, things of that nature that'll hurt him, but not necessarily be administered to the Missouri program. I don't know what's going to get, if anything's going to happen with the Miami current basketball program. You know, Durant Scott was suspended 3 games last year, the first 3 this year. By the way, one of which was a loss to Florida Gulf Coast, one of their 3 losses. But other than that, I don't know. You know, again, it'll be interesting to see what else happens, if anything.
All right. We are up against it, so we got to wrap up soon here. But I did want to get just a little more actual basketball in, and I did want to address Miami playing so well. And then Maryland, on the other hand, not. I mean, they beat Duke. They lose to BC. I'm surprised by both of these. Like, I know Miami's good. They keep winning in such great ways where now it's getting hard, Gary, for me to not picture this team going to the Final Four. Like, legitimately, like, regardless of their bracket, whether they're 1 or 2 seed, they're so old, so experienced, they're winning in so many different ways. I think Miami is even due more widespread respect and credit in spite of the pub they've gotten the past couple weeks.
It might be in a different year hard to pick them because you could imagine them in a scenario, you know, go back to 2008, getting overwhelmed by that Kansas team, you know, getting overwhelmed by that UCLA team or the Memphis team or the Carolina team. But in a year where there doesn't seem to be, with all due respect to Indiana, a clearly dominant team in the country, then I don't think they're going to get overwhelmed by anybody. And so if you can just take the idea that they don't have NBA players all over the court off the table and recognize that this might be a year where that's not necessary to go do the whole thing, then what do they have? Older guys, experienced guys, you know, strong guys, kids who know how to play, kids who are extremely well coached, and a dynamic little point guard who has just been the difference in this whole team. And though he'll never have the numbers to suggest this, you know, could be in play for ACC Player of the Year. I mean, he, in terms of everything he means to that basketball team. So last night on Inside College Basketball, he asked all of us after this, you know, 13th straight win in the ACC, is Miami going to win a national championship? And my point was this. I'm not going to pick them to win the national championship because I'd probably lean more towards an Indiana right now. But, you know, I don't know that that's the bar we should be setting for Miami. I mean, this is Miami basketball. As recently as a couple of years ago, they couldn't get people to come to the game. Frank Haith got the Missouri ballot after never finishing better than 5th in the ACC. Why? Because it was assumed nationally that 5th in the ACC at Miami is pretty damn good, or at least okay. And yet now they're 13-0 in the ACC. They're winning games every single time they play. They've beaten Duke by 25. They've beaten Carolina by 25. That's like never been done in the ACC. And so I know, particularly watching Sunday night's game and last night's game as well, some folks are going, well, they're not good enough offensively, and they're just squeaking by, and they're just getting lucky. Well, in this year, there's something to be said for just getting by because a hell of a lot of teams aren't able to do it. It, to me, is the very best story in college basketball.
It really is. Goodman, did you want to trampoline off that, or did you want to maybe take Maryland or even Missouri's win? I just wanted to hit a couple quick hoop things for the listeners before we wrap up here.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I've said it. I think Miami's a really good team. I don't know if I'm willing to say it would be a surprise to me if they don't go to the Final Four, Matt. I think, again, they could be a team that could lose in the second game. They could be a team that goes to the Final Four, and not much will surprise me this year. You know, Missouri was interesting watching them last night because everybody had deemed Florida unbeatable in the SEC. And I've just never bought into that. I've never bought into the fact that really any team's unbeatable in any league this year. And Florida showed its warts. Again, Kenny Boynton taking the two most important shots for the Florida Gators in the waning moments. I just sometimes I don't get Billy Donovan. I don't think he drew up that last one for Boynton necessarily, but it found its way into Boynton's hands, and he missed it again, and that's why ultimately I will never trust a Florida team right now with Kenny Boynton on it. And again, I think he's a good kid. All that, I would have run a ball screen with Wilbekin and Eric Murphy or gotten one of those to the ball with the game on the line. We've tried enough. We've seen that tape enough times with Kenny Boynton taking the final shot, and that's why ultimately I don't think Florida is that much better than Missouri. When Missouri gets it going, when Phil Pressey is playing like Phil Pressey, and unfortunately for Phil Pressey, he's been up and down this season. When he's good, he's great, as I wrote. When he's bad, he's been awful at times.
All right, just real quick here. So you've got Florida just barely better than Missouri. From both of you, Goodman, you first. So who do you take more neutral court, Florida or Miami?
Boy, I don't know. That's a tough one. I probably would take Florida because they've been there and done it. But I think I like Miami's talent level, the way their pieces fit, the way they're on a mission. I might take Miami over Florida.
What about you, Gary?
I take Miami over Florida. Listen, you know, Florida's been beating the hell out of teams, but when at an almost unprecedented level for a power conference school, and it's impressive, and they deserve to be ranked in the top 10 somewhere. But, you know, when Gonzaga blows through a bunch of bad teams from January to March, we discount that a little bit because of the competition. And when Memphis blows through bad teams through January to March, we discount that, rightfully so, because of the level of competition. I don't think folks have properly discounted, you know, what Florida has been doing because they've been doing it against SEC schools. What people fail to realize, or at least some people fail to realize, is that they've been doing it against bad schools. You know, I don't care that Mississippi State's in the SEC. They are terrible. Auburn is terrible. Georgia, terrible. Even the teams with winning records, they're like, who else is even good? Like, who in the SEC, seriously, do you trust to get to the second weekend?
Not one
like,
team.
Do you even pick to get to the second weekend? Forget trust, that you'll even pick to be in the Sweet 16. So I won't pick the SEC school to get there outside of Florida. Right. And yet,
how many would you pick in the ACC? How many would you pick in the ACC? Two.
Actually, maybe three. I mean, depending on the draw, I might take NC State.
You wouldn't trust them, though. I mean, like, you're not.
But outside of that, like, who do we really trust? Earlier, we were talking about the Final Four, and I don't know that Matt used this exact phrase, but you used it for him. Be surprised if Miami doesn't make the Final Four. I don't think there's a single team in the country that I'll be surprised if they don't make the Final Four. I mean, four are going to get there.
Yeah.
But it could be any four of 15. And even if Indiana doesn't make the Final Four, in other words, they lose at the buzzer in the Elite Eight, I won't sit there and go, oh, my God, can you believe they're not in the Final Four? Like back in, you know, whatever year it was, Cal's first year at Kentucky, the John Wall, the Marcus Cousins, Patrick Patterson team, like, I couldn't believe that team didn't get to the Final Four. Like, when they lost to West Virginia, I was like, and even looking back at it now, like,
yeah,
how did that team not get to the Final Four?
Because they had pros. They had a lot of pros.
Well, my point is, I was shocked by that. And there is not a team in the country that will shock me by losing short of the Final Four. I just don't think anybody that, you know, like last year if Kentucky wouldn't have got there, I would have been shocked. Like, how did they not get to the Final Four? This year, there is nobody that's going to surprise me if they don't make it. I'll just say, hey, that's the way the season is unfolding.
I very much agree. Totally. It's just that kind of year. I'll let you guys go. You know, we were like, you know what, we got to squeeze it. We only got time for like a 20-minute podcast. I looked down, and this has actually been 30 minutes, and a shorter one at that. But, fellas.
I got to go, man. I got to get out of here.
I know. You got to go. I have no idea where you're going. You're in the city, so I'm assuming it could be anywhere that I shouldn't know about. So get on it.
From the bar. Hey. Going to sleep.
I got all sorts of important stuff going on today. You have no idea.
I can only imagine. All right, buddy. Thank you both. Follow him on Twitter at Gary Parrish CBS, at Goodman CBS. We'll be back next Wednesday with these two and promise a little bit of a longer podcast. More hoop stuff. Had to get to the Miami NCAA stuff because it is a big topic of conversation. So thank you, guys. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We will be back with a Friday podcast, and we will talk to you then.